listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue, wherever you may be listening. On a yacht, perhaps, or maybe you've snuck into the theatre with some headphones and are listening there. Whilst performing surgery, up a treehouse, wherever you are, thank you. Available on 2SER 107.3, 2SER.com and on iTunes. This is the program where a special guest joins me in the studio for a little chat about themselves, and they also play four very interesting songs of their choosing. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today is a radio presenter, comedian and actress. She's appeared on Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell, The Project and A League of Their Own, just to name a few. Currently a co-host and one of the names of Triple J's drive show, Veronica and Lewis, it's Veronica Milsom.
Hey!
Welcome, Veronica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Actually, just reading that out loud, Veronica and Lewis, has anyone ever called you Veronica and Lewis or Veronica and Lewis?
That's right. Like, yeah, that? People think that for a while they thought our middle name was Anne, and so it was Veronica Ann Lewis, which was wild. And then we got Anne Edmonds in to do a sketch with us about it and pretend that she was the third member of our team who never got to say anything ever, which she was very good at. But yeah, it is strange that when, like, I see someone at a music festival, they'll go, Veronica and Lewis! Like, what? That's so weird. Just, I guess people don't know our surnames, which is odd.
Yeah, I guess. Mm. I guess, well, that's what happens when your first name is only in the title.
Yeah. I mean, it's a branding issue ongoing, but.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be sorted.
Yeah, like all the music shifts, you know, Zan Rowe, Jen Fricker, Louis McCurdy, always just saying the full name. Anyway, yeah. Let's not get into branding so early.
Okay, sorry. Hey, let's go back to, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Geelong, home of the Bollards. I don't know. Do you know that about Geelong? We're famous for having bollards.
Okay.
Which are just these big wooden things that have faces carved out of them.
Right.
Yeah, I think that the council at one point thought that that was a real scoop. Like, we didn't have a big pineapple or a big anything, but we have a lot of bollards that line the streets. Anyway, I haven't been back to Geelong for a long time. Okay. Probably take them away. But yeah, I grew up in Geelong and then moved to Melbourne for uni and then moved across to Perth to do more uni, to study radio.
Okay.
And back to Melbourne, then to Sydney, where I've been for 7 years now.
And what were the earlier years like for you? What were you... Was that in Melbourne?
Cool
and...
at school?
Yeah.
No. I'm a try-hard. That's what I am. Yeah, I loved school and didn't really necessarily get into... I played a bit of music. I was in the band and choir and stuff. But my brother introduced me to music, so I wasn't like a crazy... like music head. Well, you'll hear about this a little bit later on.
Okay.
When we put on spoilers, Silverchair. But yeah, went on to study creative arts at Melbourne Uni and just got to know the biggest and most excellent weirdos.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea about when I lived in Geelong.
Okay.
And it was very, you know, everyone was a bit the same in Geelong that I moved in circles around.
You said, did you say you just played in a band as well? Or you played music?
Well, I mean, I played flute.
Yeah?
In a,
that's still rock.
I mean, is it? I guess, actually, there's more and more flutes being whipped out. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard have made the flute cool again, right?
There you go. And they release an album every day, so.
That's right. Yeah, so I was in the school band playing the flute, but I was never good at it. Like, I spent a lot of the time miming playing the flute, which I became really good at.
Yeah? Okay.
So that's a skill in itself. I mean, it's acting.
Yeah, it is. And that got you into acting. Didn't really. I had a friend at school. We had to learn the recorder back in, I think, year five. Mm-hmm. And the whole year, he didn't buy a recorder, didn't go out and get anything. He just had a ruler and would just use that. And no one ever noticed.
What?
He just mimed the whole time with a ruler.
Or maybe they thought that he had something a little bit wrong with him.
He does work at 2SER, so I think, yeah, there might be. And what about comedy itself? What got you into that?
Well, that was sort of an accident in doing it professionally. I always kind of put on plays and stuff for my family. I was one of like those kids that was like, I'll be Mary in the nativity scene every year. But then I went over to Perth to study broadcasting And it was initially to be like a news anchor, or like do news reports or do news on the radio. It's this really great course if anyone's interested in radio. It's at a whopper, like a 1-year graduate diploma. Anyway, and so I thought, oh, that'd be great to do so I could actually get a job kind of performing. You know, I thought performing a news report might be a bit, you know,
yeah,
there's something a bit performative about it. But it turns out that when I did like the weather reports and that kind of thing, people would just laugh at them the whole time.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you were being funny, or?
They thought that it was me being funny, okay. But it definitely wasn't. And I've still got them now. And I watched it back the other day and I was like, yeah, I guess I can see why I look like I've got a smile in my eyes that I can't take this entire thing seriously, being a weather girl. And then that sort of led me to making these fake reports, which I did with this character that I put up on YouTube called Victoria Dynamite. It was like a fake current affairs reporter. And then entered them to this big cattle call competition thing with Andrew Denton for a TV show he made called Hungry Beast, which was like 8 years ago now or something. I entered the videos there, and then he kind of got me into comedy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Andrew Denton had a lot to do with it.
So much to do with it.
Oh.
Yeah. And just learning how to write comedy was such a difficult thing.
Yeah, I bet.
And under very high pressure situations in like a very scary time slot on the ABC where, you know, you had to meet the scrutiny of ABC viewers that were like, this is shit the whole time. But you know what? It was a steep learning curve, but you just had to work it out. And I still really haven't worked out how to write comedy, but I'm, you know, slowly learning.
Were there any comedians that inspired you?
Well, I always loved McAuliffe, which was weird that I ended up getting a job on his show. I mean, Denton is so fabulous. There's Julia Davis is like my biggest female comedy icon. She's a British comedian who's done a lot of stuff with Rob Brydon.
Okay.
If anyone like is interested, there's my favorite TV show is called Human Remains, which is amazing. It's like a mockumentary that Julia Davis and Rob Brydon are in. And I try to essentially kind of copy the idea of it to see whether I would be able to do it, which I sort of, I mean, I didn't successfully do it, but I attempted it for like an ABC project a couple of years ago. The idea of just like a mockumentary about weirdos.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think shows like that always seem to work. So
yeah, it's hard to know whether the mockumentary is slipping away. Don't you reckon?
That's actually a good point. I can't think of the most recent mockumentary I've seen in...
Well, I guess it was Parks and Rec.
No, that's very true.
Yeah, like because there was the whole Office thing and then you thought, oh, that sort of spurred it on and that like set up the format of guy or girl sitting there being interviewed. They set up for a joke that you then see, like a physical gag or something. And then that ran really thin, I thought, after 5 years or something. Well, The Office was a long time ago, probably a decade ago or something now. And so I don't know whether, it's dead or not, but it keeps rearing its ugly head, the mockumentary, and it's still delivering the goods a little. So who knows?
Okay. Has comedy affected your life in a good way, would you say?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way it really could in a bad way, except for the judgment.
Yeah.
I guess. But, you know, you're going to get that in any career you do, I think. I guess it's just a slightly more public judgment. You know, when you get reviews for a live show and they say you got 2 stars and you're like, it was worth 5. Oh, no. Which is really can hurt your self-esteem. But you just get thick skin and move on. And the sort of people you meet doing comedy are just the best.
Yeah. You mentioned studying radio. Did you do that with your partner, Lewis? Partner in crime on radio, Lewis, I should say.
Although Lewis does look a lot like my partner in real life, which is also confusing because there's been a couple of instances where people have seen me and Nick, my actual partner, at the movies or something, and they've been like tweeted, or, you know, I can see you, Veronica, you're with Lewis at the movies. I'm like, it's not Lewis. Oh, God, they're just tall white guys with glasses. Sorry, what was the question?
You guys met at college.
Well, no, we met at high school.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so we met in Geelong. We both went to the same high school.
Right.
And then we're sort of vaguely friends. I dated one of Lewis's friends for a little while at high school. And then we met up again doing this Andrew Denton TV show, Hungry Beast.
Okay.
So we both randomly got chosen for it.
Yeah, right.
Thrown into like a comedy writer's room together. And did that for 3 seasons, so 3 years worth. And in the meantime, Triple J sort of said, hey, are you interested in making a demo for us and doing some mid-dawns? And we did that.
Well, there you go.
Mm.
We're going to have to get into your old song to start the show. Do you know what you've chosen?
Absolutely, I do. It's probably a song that hasn't been played on 2SER in a little while.
Yeah, I would say
ever
since the beginning of 2SER, this song has never been played, so this is very
yes!
exciting.
Okay. Well, I mean, I chose Enya. I mean, I've got a reputation for loving Enya, and I'm not ashamed of it, frankly, because I remember way back in the day whenever my mum would clean the house on a Saturday. I don't know where my dad was. Playing golf or something, some bullshit. He probably should have been helping out. But she used to put on like the greatest hits of Enya, and I never liked it at the time. But now it always reminds me of these good times of just like relaxing on a Saturday. You know, mum would be like fixing stuff up around the house, cooking something or whatever. And when I went on a holiday when I was, I think, 18, straight out of school, went backpacking around Europe. And this will make me sound super old, but I don't care. I had to carry around a Discman.
Yes, that's fine.
And inside, like, you had all these CDs, which you just had to lug around with you. And one of the CDs that I had bought was Enya's Greatest Hits. So I have all of these bizarre memories of listening to Enya whilst being on a train, you know, going through Italy. So it conjures up all these amazing visuals for me, and I hope it does you. Plus, Enya is a fascinating person. She lives in a castle by herself with cats, never does live shows, is worth so much money, never, like, she's a total recluse, never no. comes out of her castle.
I didn't know this.
What?
This is news to me.
Start researching Enya.
Okay.
She's freaky and exciting to get to know.
All right. Well, here's Enya on 2SER.
Let me say, let me say, let me crush upon your shoulder, let me
Yeah. Oh, it's still going.
John, respect the artistry.
Such a professional. There we go. That was Enya there with, what is the name of that song?
Orinoco Flow.
Thank you very much. You sound like a professional radio person doing that.
Not at all. I'm the least professional radio person you know. But admit it, you enjoyed that.
I did. I did a lot.
Yeah. As you were mentioning during the song, it is the biggest hit.
Yeah.
Along with like some of, you know, the one, the song that was on the Braveheart CD. You'd know it if you heard it.
Okay.
Anyway, it's Enya's greatest hits. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Go out and get it. Do yourself a favour. Okay, so when did you first start in radio?
First started in radio at, after I went to Whopper. Basically, the thing is, you have to do heaps of internships. So I did a broadcast diploma at Whopper, and then they get you to go and like visit different radio stations and check out what you would like to do. So I did lots of stuff at ABC local radio there. I also worked at Today FM there, Mix FM, and Nova. And so I ended up getting jobs at all three of those radio stations. I worked at Today FM as like a girl that hands out, you know, icy cold cans of Coke and stuff, which was pretty fun, admittedly. Like you just get to hoon around in a car. And actually, in Perth, though, you hand out some pretty wild stuff, like yesterday's newspaper. And yeah, they get really short on prizes. And I think the West Australian is one of their big sponsors, but they're like, we're not giving you today's paper. Give them yesterday's, which is definitely true. And then I never did any on-air shifts with them, but I did with Mix FM, and I panelled the Gardening Australia show. Which was the least attractive shift. It was Sundays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really gave me insomnia too, like knowing I had to wake up that night before to be at work at 4 to start the shift at 6. I didn't have like a wild social life on those Saturday nights. And then from that point, got a job at Nova and did the mornings shift there for a little while.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, before I transferred across to Nova Melbourne. And then did weekends there and then got a job at Triple J.
And you've obviously enjoyed it very much because you've done a lot of travelling and had to move around quite a bit. So
yeah,
radio is obviously your big passion.
Oh, I love it. And in fact, sometimes when I'm on holidays and I don't do radio for a little while, like I'll just be on holidays for 2 weeks, I'll listen to the radio and be like, I'm jealous. I really want to go back on. It's because it's so much fun interacting with listeners.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know if it's something that's would be like a feeling that everyone would experience, but I get a real buzz out of reading the text line and interacting with people that I never would otherwise, which is really cool. And like one of the great things about Triple J is because it's nationwide and you're talking to people in the most remote, bizarre places, you know?
Who are some of the more your favourite people that you've managed to interview?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think of the ones that I have definitely not enjoyed interviewing.
That's
way
fine
more,
as well.
Way more than I've interviewed. Oh, we've had some stinker interviews.
Yeah?
Of people who just did not want to be there.
Okay.
And just like a drawing on a piece of paper the entire time that you're talking to them. And that you call them out on it. You're just like, sorry, do you have somewhere else to be?
Are we talking musical artists?
Yeah.
Okay.
Musical artists who just are being told by PR people that they've got to go in to do this interview. They're here for summer festivals.
Yeah.
So that's been rubbish. But some of the people, let's turn this around and make it positive, who have been great to interview. Well, it's always weird doing junkets. You know, junkets as far as like you go to a hotel room and you have to interview like a big celebrity and all these other radio stations are waiting outside the door for their turn to come in.
Mm.
And when people surprise you in a really excellent way, like they're not just going through the motions. I felt like a really interesting connection with Ben Stiller when we had an interview with him.
Okay.
Jeez, he's beautiful looking in real life. Yeah, he's got the most amazing skin. I mean, he didn't feel the connection with me. It was one way. I just want to make that real clear. But he has these brilliant blue eyes. And he really looks deep into your soul when he answers the question, which I thought was very nice. I think I can't even remember what the movie was. It was like a shitty movie that he'd just come over to promote. But he seemed like he had a real good soul, you know? And another person that we met through a junket was Jeffrey Tambor, who was really intriguing to talk to as well. He was really softly spoken, but in a real Hollywood kind of way. Like, he drew you in and made you like lean closer and want to hear what he had to say. But he also just seemed like he had genuine, interesting, unique points of view about things, and that he wasn't just spouting out the same rubbish that he was telling every single person. He was very considerate of questions. And I suppose he was working in a delicate subject too. We were talking to him about Transparent and the character that he plays, which if you haven't seen Transparent, you've got to. It's on Stan and it's amazing. So he was particularly impressive as well.
You've done Drive for a while now.
Mm.
And you and Lewis get up to a bit of mischief and do a few sketches and have a lot of fun. How do you find that? Have you had some experiences where you're just like, this is just the best job in the world. I love doing this.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we've been doing Drive for about 2.5 years now. And then I'll finish up soon, go on maternity leave, which will be very odd because Lewis will have to get a new... I think he's going to go through some sort of bachelorette process where he'll give a rose to a lady. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, like, for example, earlier this year when we got the keys to the Big Kahuna, which was this town, we decided we wanted to get the keys to a city. And this one town called the Kahuna put up their hand and we were like, this is too good to be true, the Big Kahuna. And we just got to travel out there and have such a wonderful time getting to know the locals and doing these weird challenges that they'd set up. And they all, like, it gave us lots of food along the way and were just really accommodating. They were real chuffed that we'd come to the town. That was one of the experiences. But another one, which was one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life, was the one night stand in Geraldton last year. Just like announcing in front of 14,000 people or however many it was, people that were so excited about seeing live music in their small town of WA was really wild.
Yeah.
And just the energy was really electric and the artists were pumped to be there. Everyone was excited to be in that moment. Like, there was no downer to be had the whole night.
That's awesome. That must have been quite an experience. We're going to have to move on to your new song now.
Yes.
What have you chosen?
The new song that I've chosen, probably one of the best live acts I've seen over the last couple of years. I was trying to think of who I've really walked away from a gig thinking that was just the best. And that's probably Janelle Monáe was one of them. Everything, Everything was another one. So a band out of the UK. This particular song called Kimasabi, I love. And like voted for in the Hottest 100 and stuff and was really trying to get people to get around it. Not on air, like behind the scenes. Because it's just, I can't not have a good time when I'm listening to it. And it being performed live was so incredible. Like, it's not the most mind-blowing song of all time. It's just a good time.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, well, here's Everything, Everything with Kimasabi. Everything, Kemosabe. Veronica?
Yes?
What was your first TV appearance?
Oh, I can tell you that it is a really weird one. A Current Affair in Perth. I played the part of a woman in distress in a reconstruction.
No way, you got to do a reenactment.
Yes!
That's so cool.
I know, it was my dream come true. I always wanted to do a reenactment. And when they sent around an email to our uni saying, does anyone want to pretend to be the victim of a home invasion? I was like, yes! So I think you got paid $100 cash or something.
That's all right.
And then you had to just rock up to this weird house, like a location that they'd hired. And this other actor was playing this dude who'd... was invading the home with like a balaclava on. The only problem was, which is the reason I'm ashamed of the entire thing, I hadn't considered the pants that I was wearing, and the pants I was wearing were very low cut. And so when the guy kind of like pushed me to the ground in, you know, a fully orchestrated way, and it yes. was, you know, totally fine, above board, he pushed me down and my whole ass crack shows. So it really takes away from the reconstruction. But I've always wanted to get the footage back to see what it looked like, but they won't release it to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Stupid A Current Affair.
Yeah, because they have an entirely different A Current Affair in Perth. There's so many things in WA that are just unique to WA, you know? So I'll never get to see it again, but what a wondrous thing, debut TV appearance.
Did you want to get into TV after that, or did you think that was fun? I'm not going to do that again. And then,
well, I always wanted to get into TV.
Okay.
Like I always wanted to be a getaway host.
Okay.
All right. Isn't that the dream of everyone?
Yep.
Nope.
No, yeah, definitely.
I don't even know if Getaway's on anymore. It must
no
be. I think it's still on some flights.
Surely they've been everywhere now.
Well, yeah, you'd imagine.
This is the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, sweet deals everywhere. But, yeah, I always wanted to get into TV, but I think that really cemented it for me, doing a reconstruction with my pants down.
So. Starting at the top. How did you get involved with Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell?
So that came about because I was did like a guest role on Talking About Your Generation, that show that mm-hmm. McAuliffe hosted. And he talked to me afterwards in the green room and was like, oh, would you be interested in like auditioning for the role of one of the younger female ensemble members? And I was like, yes, please. That would be very excellent. I was like so nervous around him. But he's also quite like a nervous guy as well.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends on the circumstance. But in like propositioning another actor for a job, he, you know.
Yeah.
It's not entirely his area of comfort. And I did an audition which came about 3 months after I got the material. Like, for some reason, it was really delayed, which is a nightmare if you're an actor going, is it still happening?
Yeah.
And you're, like, sitting there getting very tense about the entire thing. But I knew the script inside out. The only weird thing was that I just, like, I learnt both parts for some reason, because I had so much time and I really wanted the job. And I said to him at the time, I didn't really know much about what the show was, but when I was reading opposite him, I later found out there was barely any other people really auditioned, so it was quite a small pool. But I said, oh, hey, do you mind if I read the role of the host for this one? And he was like, sure. But I didn't know whether it was like that he was going to be the host of like a daily show type thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, he played the part of like a character and I played the host, which I'm sure was very strange in retrospect. But at the time, it felt totally normal. And yeah, and from that point, he kind of gave me a wink afterwards and was like, oh, thanks so much for coming in. And then again, it was months until we found out that the show was going ahead.
And what about working on air with him? Was it, were you nervous? Because you said earlier that you liked Sean McAuliffe growing up, and so what's
really
it like
sitting
opposite him and being in a sketch with him?
Yeah, I never stopped getting nervous. Yeah. Being, well, apart from the fact that the way that Mad as Hell is run is really, it's quite tough conditions for an actor, and I don't want to make acting seem like it's a real hard job, but you get the scripts mostly the night before, and then you've got to perform them for a live audience. And they're quite dense and, like, particularly politically dense. Like, yeah. They've, the sort of material that you're talking about and the exact beats that you need to get a joke out of are quite specific. So it's really hard, actually. And they shoot about double the amount that ends up going to air. So more often than not, you're shooting, like, four things a night. And then heaps of it will never make it to air and you never find out why, which is another weird thing.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what did I do wrong? Oh, well, I'll just guess I'll try again next week and we'll see. Yeah, and but acting opposite him was really frightening because he, you know, his character of the host will often be looking at you in quite like a disappointed or disapproving way.
Yeah.
And in the back of your mind, you're like, oh my God, is he acting?
Yeah.
Or is he, as my boss, thinking that I'm doing the worst job ever? But also he just looks so funny. Like the tiny looks that he gives are really great. The other thing is that, you know, the magic of the entire thing, the studio experience, means that he is often looking across your shoulder through an auto cue, so you don't actually perform together.
Right, okay.
You don't really have eye contact.
Sure.
He's looking across your shoulder. You're looking to him, but he's not really giving you anything to feed off as a reaction. So that's another weird part of performing for that show.
Yeah, so it's, you're not even talking to someone. It's I understand what you mean. It's very...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't kind of have a connection with another person in a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is hard to... I mean, try it with the person you're opposite. If you're in the car right now, do it with someone else. Try to communicate with them without eye contact and both looking in different directions. It's pretty strange.
So other than A Current Affair, what other programs have you been on?
Well, a couple of them you were mentioning before. I used to do these crosses for the project, which were really manic. They were like they were on Friday nights. You'd do this really quick thing where you would say what was going on in the town that you're in. Mm-hmm. So they're really hectic because you have an earpiece in and the studio is crossing to five different people, but it's at the very end of the project on a Friday night. And sometimes, more often than not, they have no time at all to get to you. They're like... At first they say, oh, you've got 45 seconds. So you think of like a little script in your head. Great, I've got 45 seconds. And then like 5 seconds before they go, okay, Veronica, you've got 10 seconds, condense the script. And so, so you end up going,
Hi,
the Thai food fair is on right now. Come on down. And then that's it. And you end up looking like a real dickhead. And you go into the weekend just feeling so sad and sorry for yourself. I stuffed that up so many times. I can't believe they kept asking me back. Now that the segment discontinues, A, I think because it was very expensive and not really worth it, and B, probably because I ruined it for them. But yeah, the project's been really fun. There's been a couple of other panel shows and stuff I've been on. But the other big one that was... really excellent but a massive flop was this Ben Elton show called Live from Planet Earth.
Okay.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah,
what do you remember of it?
I just remember it. Like, I remember Ben Elton having a show and then it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, it really got panned online. Everyone hated it. So, okay. I mean, maybe with good reason. I think it was pretty rubbish. But it was a live sketch show, which was on Channel 9. It only ran for 3 episodes. And live sketch is really hard to do, but also the scripts were not that funny, I think, is what the audience came to the consensus about. But it was a really cool experience, and a lot of the cast members are doing really interesting things now. And it was really cool to be a part of a TV show where there were rehearsals.
Yeah, okay.
Which I'd never been a part of before. Because it was live and they had to completely choreograph revolving sets and that sort of thing. Yeah, you got to rehearse the material over a period of like 6 weeks in the lead up. And there's so much stuff that we rehearsed that never made it anywhere, you know? Because there was only 3 episodes went to air. But it was cool.
You've also done some work with director Kate Stewart on a program, The Record.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
So The Record's a TV show that I wrote and which is still kind of floating around at the moment. If anyone is interested in buying a TV show and has a platform to show it, it's still getting about. In fact, it's really hard to find on the internet because we're still thinking that we might sort of try to sell it to the States.
Okay.
Or do something with it. But the idea of it is, again, a mockumentary, like we were talking about before. And it's about people who want to achieve world records and their very bizarre world records. And it's the stories behind these people and what's missing from their lives, essentially, and why they need to achieve these really weird things. So the most recent, the pilot that we shot for the ABC, which we got some cash for, was about this couple that have the world's largest biological family. And so they have 68 kids and they want to get 69. And it's actually based on a true thing, apparently, in Russia. Like, okay. If you look this up in the Guinness World Records, there is a Russian woman who has 68 kids.
Okay.
Right. It's just, you don't think it's possible. And it definitely isn't. But, yeah, apparently she just had lots of quadruplets and stuff. So we tried to, like, I tried to work backwards from that idea of how the hell it could be possible, and then some funny circumstances that would arise from trying to have so many kids in a house, and how you'd put them to work, and how you'd bathe them, and how, you know, how their schooling would be done. How
their names.
The names. So, yeah, that was, like, we named them after places that we'd, you know, had sex and stuff, which was really fun. And the show's kind of, I made it with Steen Raskopoulos as well, who's a really great improviser in Sydney. And, yeah, we had a hell of a lot of fun and had maybe 40 kids on set. It was pretty hectic.
Yeah, I bet.
Mm.
We have to move on to your Borrowed song now.
Yeah.
What have you gone with?
So I've gone with Silverchair, and I chose this in particular because my brother introduced me to Silverchair, and it really turned a direction in my mind about the sort of music that I liked. But I remember the first time I saw Silverchair live, which was because my brother had to give up the tickets because he had some sort of sporting event that he needed to be in a different place for. He was so angry that he had to give me the tickets. And I, mum said, well, you're not going without me because you're underage and I'm going to go with you. But also we've got 2 other tickets. Who should we give them to? So my cousin got 1 ticket and my nana got the other.
Oh.
Which was really fun because she'd never been to a concert before.
Silverchair's a good start.
Yeah. And I have this very distinct memory of being in the crowd and this group of people behind us chanting, throw the granny in the mosh pit, at which point we left. So that was about halfway through. And it's a really great story in the family from now on. And so, yeah, the song that I've chosen is Across the Night from Silverchair.
Across the night, it was the moon that stole my slumber. across the night. I fell in love with people sleeping.
That was, I always forget about that little bit at the end. That's twice I've done that. Such a professional.
I would have forgotten about that too, admittedly.
That's a problem with having songs you already know. Okay. That was definitely finished now. Silverchair with Across the Night from the album Diorama. My guest today is Veronica Milsom. Veronica, as you mentioned earlier, one of us is pregnant.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
This is the big elephant in the room. Man, sometimes I feel like such a big whale. Oh, I did yoga the other night, and I'm the only person in my yoga class for some reason. Prenatal yoga. Yeah, it's not popular. Anyway, okay. So every Sunday night for the last, 4 months, I've been doing this yoga class by myself with the teacher. I keep expecting her to cancel the class. I guess she's on a wage or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, and she was like, just get your leg in this position, a pigeon pose or whatever. And I just, was maneuvering my big whale body around. I was like, this is the ultimate humiliation. It's so weird that there's this small being inside. Yeah, it's really odd, the whole preg experience. Do not recommend. At this stage, I'm trying to, it'll amount to something in a couple of months.
Yeah, so you must be excited for what's about to happen then.
Oh, who knows? Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Mixed emotions?
I'm 100% excited about it, but it's also I have no idea what it'll be like. Except all I know is that I had to attend a birthing class the other day. Oh, I volunteered myself for it. And I watched a birthing video, which was a real eye-opener. And I cried.
Oh.
Yeah, because I was just like, that was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I did not expect that for myself. But I think it's the hormones. So it'll be really fun. I'm looking forward to a new chapter of life. But yeah, taking a little break from work for a while and then seeing what happens.
Are you hoping to get back into radio?
Yeah, yeah. So the idea is to come back to Triple J in July,
okay.
Which will be cool.
That's pretty soon though.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what the heck will happen. But soon, I guess so. It's 8 months off.
Yeah, okay.
Mm.
And if you're not, working in radio, what are you doing? What's your weekends involved?
I spend a lot of time putting a hard time on myself about doing other kinds of work because I have this constant fear of being, having no other projects on the boil.
Yeah.
So doing lots of writing sort of stuff. I'm playing a character on an ABC TV show at the moment, which I've been helping to put together. So on my Facebook page, you can see there's these videos of her. It's about a woman who's trying to backstroke across Bass Strait. Doing a lot of that sort of stuff. And also, I'm seeing a lot of live music, although that's definitely getting harder while you're lugging around another kid on your front. It's certainly not as fun. Plus, you feel like people are going to, bump into you the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Eating delicious food. I seem to spend a lot of time just gorging myself on delicious meals, which is pretty fun, and spending time with my partner, Nick.
Cool. Yeah. And you've also done a bit of voiceover work, haven't you?
I've done
your voice pop up on ads.
Oh, yeah?
From time to time. Yeah.
Funnily enough, one of the only ads that I've really done is a commercial Radio Australia ad telling people on commercial radio that they should have an ad on commercial radio, which is so ironic or something, given I work at
Triple J. It's like Inception, an ad for an ad.
Yeah.
Inside an ad.
But also then working at a place where you're not allowed to have ads or talk about brands.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that was strange but very fun. It was with Cole the Carpenter from...
from the comedy company.
Yeah. He and I did that ad together, and that was a real weird thing to have met him. I did not expect you to even know the comedy company. I barely do. It's from when I was 5 years old or something.
I'm a lot older than...
Really? Then you look.
Then, yeah. I don't want to talk about how old I am.
I just admitted to having a Discman when I was traveling overseas, so I think we're on an even playing field there.
I really don't want to, but we have to wrap this up. And I don't want to. This has been a lot of fun. I get way overboard and I ask way too many questions, and I apologize for that.
No, it's been good.
We have to get into your blues song now.
Yeah, so I guess there's so many ways to interpret this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apart from Eiffel Tower's blue.
Exactly.
Oh, has someone done that before?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like playing a blues song or playing a song that makes you sad. And I just added sadness because
mm-hmm.
I'm that sort of gal. So the most recent time that I've cried at a gig was a really weird experience. I haven't cried at a gig very often, but I went to see the Whitlams perform at some sort of anniversary show with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra at the Opera House, and I cried for like the first 15 minutes because it reminded me so much of just a weird time when I was like a very early teen.
Yeah.
Was it? No, I couldn't have been. Maybe I was a bit older. Anyway, but it was when I was just loving life, loving school,
yeah.
and loving the Whitlams. So this song's called Charlie Number 3, and it's about a friend of the Whitlams. I mean, I can't tell this story because I don't really know what happened, but died. Charlie died. And there's a number of songs about Charlie, and I really, really love this one. And I was just weeping at the Opera House listening to it, and it was very magical with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you so much, Veronica Milsom. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me.
He'll need some time to get over this. But a moment is all he can spare. His body's out there in the city lights, and he is trying to care. See him offering himself to the world, staring down from the 56th floor. Yeah, and I'd be happy just to catch him again. We go out, we don't always come back. The night pressing in on his weary mind. There's a half-eaten moon in the sky. Nothing is calling him back to bed, and no one is saying goodbye. See him offering himself to the world, staring down from the 56th floor. Yeah, and I'd be happy just to catch him again. We go out because we go back and back and back and back and from the 56th floor. Yeah, and he's not happy. It's the weekend again. We go out, we don't always come back. See him offering himself to the world, staring down from the 56th floor. Yeah, and I'd be happy just to catch him again. We go out because we go back. We go back and back. himself to the world, staring